I was looking at the flowers just now and thought of this experience I really just had a few weeks ago, which was I was in New York City and the Dalai Lama was speaking at Radio City Music Hall. That's where he was lecturing, which is very funny. I don't know what the equivalent would be here. It's a music hall. It was very funny. And he was there for 4 days, which was fantastic. And then at the end of the 4 days, I was standing by the stage door of Radio City waiting for somebody. And these other friends started bringing out the flowers that had been on stage with him and in the back room where he'd rest and things like that, and started giving them away. So they handed me a flower, and I said, well, I don't really think I should take it. I'm leaving, like, tomorrow or something for Ireland. You should really give it to someone else. And they say, no, take it. And then I'd see a friend, and I'd pass the flower on to them. And then they'd come out with more flowers and give me a flower. And I'd see another friend, and I'd hand it over to them. And this kept going on. Finally, I ended up with a flower. So I was with this group of friends, and we went to have tea somewhere. And then two of us, I holding my flower and her holding her orchid that she also got from the stage door, got into this taxi to go downtown. And the friends leaving us said something within the driver's hearing about the Dalai Lama. So we got into the taxi, and the driver said, did you just see the Dalai Lama? And we said, yes. And he said, I heard him speak a few years ago at Central Park. He gave this big public talk in Central Park. And the driver said, he was so amazing. He said, you just hear him speak, and it fills your heart with joy. So I knew in that moment, I had to give him the flower. So when I paid, I also gave him the flower. And I said, this is from the Dalai Lama's room. And it was a really beautiful moment. And the next day, I left for Ireland. So we have so much opportunity just to be expressive in those really small ways, but meaningful ways. And that's the heart space of loving kindness, that we have so much that we share ultimately. From the Buddhist point of view, we all share a wish to be happy. No matter who we are, no matter what we've done, no matter what we may go through, we want to be happy. And it's the force of ignorance that so often leads us to make terrible mistakes, even that can cause so much suffering to ourselves and to others, but we all really want to be happy. And we share a great vulnerability. It's not that our lives are only painful and that it's grim or dire or anything like that all the time, but we share so much vulnerability, even if everything is going just fine. We know out of wisdom that one little turn of the wheel, one phone call, and you have a different life. And this is true for everybody. So even when we're consciously trying to be compassionate, it's not with a sense like I, whose life am so perfect, am being kind to you who have this, you know, horrible situation going on, which I am immune from. We may be immune from the particulars of that situation, but not from the state of loss or fear or aloneness, whatever it might be, because we share so much. And so when we offer loving kindness or compassion or sympathetic joy to someone, it's from that base of understanding, that wisdom, that we all want to be happy, that we are all vulnerable in the end, and that sharing also opens up our mind in the way of equanimity, because there's a likeness, there's a sense of connection, of you could say equality in a way, between beings. And the Dalai Lama was very funny about that. when he was just now speaking at Radio City, when he said at one point, it was kind of a digression, I think, but very good. He said something like, he started off by saying, when I met with your president, Obama, and he said, I told him, you have to treat everyone the same, whether they're a president or a prime minister or a beggar. He said, everyone's really the same at heart. We're all alike. So that's how you have to treat people. It was really very sweet. And then he went into a further digression. And he said, of course, he called me during the campaign for president, but then so did Hillary. And he said, and John McCain came to see me. And he said, they couldn't overtly ask me for my prayers so that they'd win. He said, but it was a little underlying in that message. He said, it's very difficult. He said, in India, two, I guess, competing politicians had come to him for prayers. And he said, but someone had to lose. It was really very cute. But it's that sense of sameness. So sometimes, and particularly actually in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, equanimity also implies that kind of evenness of perspective. And obviously we go up and we go down in different contexts and different roles in life, but it's having that kind of bigness of perspective, which is why from the point of view of a cosmology that incorporates a belief in many lifetimes, in Tibetan practice there's a big emphasis on things like, see, everyone is your mother. All sentient beings are your mother because they have been your mother. And often it's quite interesting because it's quite an encounter with Western psychology for many Asian teachers as they suggest something like that and the person responds with horror or something. Not that, anything but that. They're very confused because it doesn't make sense within that culture where, you know, the mother is like deified, really. Whatever she was like as a human being, it's the role. It's the nature of it. So that one doesn't work. That's okay. But it's some understanding like that of, despite, you know, a particular circumstance, how much we are the same, that we're really very connected, that has some role in both loving kindness and equanimity. The way in classical Buddhist teaching they would put it, where there is this rebirth notion that's so strong, it would be something like everyone here in this room right now has played every role with one another. We've all been one another's parents and children and friends and enemies, and we've helped one another and we've hurt one another and cried many tears together and laughed a lot together. We've all done everything because time is beginningless. And so we are all trailing an infinite number of previous lives. So from that point of view, I've often felt that the single most illogical kind of emotion to have is a sense of self-righteousness. Like I, who am so perfect way over here, I'm looking at you who did that terrible, horrible thing way over there. That terrible, horrible thing that I could never, ever, ever do, because guess what? You've done it. And of course, not everyone has that belief system, and you don't need to at all. And as a almost replacement for that same sensibility, I've often joked that I'm waiting for someone to invent a machine that will amplify someone's thoughts so that we can plug in one person per sitting and the rest of us could just listen. It'd be very interesting. You know, wow, you look so serene. Who knew? Thinking under that. Because the range of what arises within is big. We may not act on every impulse that comes up, for sure, because of training or education or background or sheer good luck. But to imagine those thoughts, those feelings don't come up in us, they only come up in others, You know, and in the absence of that machine, although I understand we're getting closer, or some people say that, I sometimes say, well, maybe we can get one volunteer for sitting, where the rest of us will sit with our eyes open and this one person will act out every impulse that comes up in their mind. That'd be entertaining too. Like, huh, really? So we're not so very different in certain ways. And we can care for one another. We can respond to one another based on that insight, because it's also true. Okay, so in doing the loving kindness while sitting, which we're about to do, usually there are three or four phrases that are used. It's good to settle on a set of phrases pretty much. You don't have to feel bound to them. You know, someone comes to mind and a very different set of phrases will come up spontaneously. That's fine. But what you don't want to do is just struggle, you know, like, what should I say for you? What should I say for you? And may I be happy, and that works. And may you be happy, and that works. And then you think of another friend, and you start, may you be happy. And then you think, well, maybe not you. You know, you get really lazy when you get happy. May you be what? May you be content? No, you'd really go to sleep if you're content. You know, because then one loses the power of the practice, which comes from the gathering of all our attention behind these phrases. So instead of gathering our attention around the feeling of the breath and loving kindness, where we have a silent repetition of certain phrases, we gather all our energy behind these phrases. And that's what really empowers the practice. Not the manufacturing of an emotion or the fabrication of a certain kind of feeling, nothing forced. It's that gathering. And that's why we say the practice is working even when we can't see it's working. It usually takes some time and some perspective to notice the effect. And as I often say, especially in this meditation practice, you will notice the effect in your life much more than in the formal sitting. Much, much more. This friend took me out to lunch one day in New York City, and it was like one of those confessional lunches where he started off by saying, I just have to confess that I've been doing loving kindness for about 3 years now. And my formal sitting, like when I sit each day or I'm on retreat, my experience while sitting is not so completely different from what it was 3 years ago. And he said, but I'm like a completely different person. I'm different with myself. I'm different with my family. I'm different ethically. I'm different in my community. And then he looked at me and he said, is that enough? And I said, yeah, I kind of think it's enough. Now, of course, we would all like that great moment, that seeming breakthrough experience, to be able to say, you know, at 325, I loved myself completely. It may not happen. That's okay. Something is happening. I can promise you, really. Although you need to look in your life rather than, you know, drive yourself crazy every 5 minutes while you're sitting like, is this it? So we silently repeat certain phrases. The phrases are the conduit for the heart's energy, for the way we pay attention. They're the experiment we're making with our attention. A common translation, although by no means the only way of doing it, a common translation of the kind of standard four phrases is something like, starting with oneself, may I be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. May I be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. This last, may I live with ease, means in the things of day-to-day life, like livelihood and family, may not be a struggle. May I live with ease. The feeling tone is meant to be one of blessing. Not pleading, not imploring, not begging. But it's a sense of blessing. As my friend, my colleague, Sylvia Borstein, often says, she said it's like handing someone a birthday card and saying, may you have a happy birthday. May you have a great new year. That's the tone of it. You can use these phrases or any phrases. They need to be big enough so you can make this offering. Think of it as an offering. to yourself or to others, but you need to be able to make it to others as well as yourself. So may I be safe. May you be safe. You know, it's not thought like if you say, may I be healthy loud enough and fast enough, you'll never get sick. But it's that blessing. We're turning our attention to that sense of well-wishing rather than just castigating ourselves for everything we've done wrong. And can you believe how stupid I was? I ordered the custard. It was like ordering the mustard and nothing. You know, may I be happy. May I be peaceful. Give yourself a break. And there is, and you know, we'll go through this a lot more tomorrow as well. There is a kind of classic movement in the loving kindness practice where we offer loving kindness to ourselves and we end with the offering of loving kindness to all beings everywhere. And what we do in the middle could change at different times. So we'll practice a little bit now and then we'll, you know, have time for questions and we'll go much more into it tomorrow. And once again, equanimity is going to be like the secret ingredient here. Because otherwise, it's not actually going to be loving kindness. It's going to be attachment. It's going to be something very different, but close enough so that we can easily get confused. So that's like saying wisdom is the secret ingredient here. That I'm really present and I'm not in control of the unfolding of events. Things are as they are. And may you be happy. So it brings us to the heart of a lot of paradox at the same time. And this is actually our practice. Okay, so let's sit together.